Welcome to PropTech Espresso. My name is Mark Hurst, a former investment banker and serial startup junkie turned real estate technologist. On each 15 to 20 minute episode, you'll hear from leading entrepreneurs and industry experts on the opportunities and challenges for the rapidly changing PropTech sector. Thanks for listening today. Grab your favorite beverage and let's learn something new.
My guest today is Robin Rivetton, CEO of Stonal, an AI real estate performance platform. Prior to joining Stonal, Robin was a VC partner at Eurizio Investment Manager, where he was active in PropTech investing, an accomplished author and current contributor to several publications. He's also been a board member throughout his career. Robin's career started in management consulting with BCG and their Paris office. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Excited for today's conversation and looking forward to hearing more about Stonal, but let's start out with my traditional PropTech Espresso question. Would love to hear your definition of PropTech.
For me, PropTech belongs to the larger space of the smart city and is related to all the built environment, all the buildings stuff, and how we could improve all the operations. Could be selling, could be leasing, could be operating, managing, investing, all this kind of even building. All this kind of stuff for tech. Tech is quite large. It could be software. It could be deep tech, alt tech. It could also be new way to offer services to consumers, for instance. So yes, it's a broad space, I would say, and it's quite normal as the real estate industry is so big that PropTech is necessarily big.
Yep. It's interesting. I think you're the first guest that I've had that has used smart city in their definition of PropTech. Definitely had lots of people obviously talk about the built world. And I think people have nibbled around the edges around smart city, but I think you're the first one that's definitively come out and used that in their definition. So that's great to hear. It's definitely a term that's used frequently, talking about prop tech. So great to see you inject that into the definition there. Would love to hear a little bit about your early career. I mentioned you're kind of started BCG in their Paris office, but would love to kind of hear kind of how you got into that and was there exposure to real estate during this kind of early phase that kind of started to pique your interest in the real estate industry?
To be honest, very limited. I interned in investment banking in law firms, and I decided to move to strategy consulting as it was the best way in my mind to discover new industries, new sectors, and I joined the BCG, but very little exposed to real estate. Real estate is not a big spender in strategy consulting in general, in Europe at least. And so I was mainly doing missions for pharmaceuticals, telcos, banking. So not really exposed to real estate. I got exposed to real estate in 2013-14 when I joined Paris Airports, which is one of the largest airport managers company in management company in the world. And when you manage an airport, you manage a lot of real estate assets.
Could definitely
be industrial facilities, could be offices, could be hotels, of course. At this moment, I discovered this industry and I became aware of the, I would say, conservativeness of this sector. And I felt that the prop tech wave, I would say, in the 2015 would be something big in this field.
Interesting. Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, you definitely think about airports and obviously the massive footprints that they have. But to your point, there are, I'm sure, very integrated airport. I guess in the U.S., I don't think about them having hotels, but obviously, I know that there obviously properties located next to many airports, and it would be kind of natural for some of the airports to own those. They've got warehouses and just parking and many facilities and things like that. So I can imagine all the different sorts of real estate asset classes that are part of a portfolio of an airport operator.
And Paris Airports manage airports in Amsterdam, Istanbul, in India. So they manage like 40 airports in the world. Santiago in Chile. It's a big airport management company.
Wow, super interesting. And I can imagine a great training ground for getting to know the real estate sector. Awesome. I know that you also spent some time doing VC investing, and you obviously invested in PropTech. What was the transit? And you mentioned obviously management consulting, you know, internships at law firms and investment banking. So not unusual, I would say, to find your way into venture capital. But what was there something specific that attracted you to that sector? And also, were you investing in other things outside of PropTech while you were a VC partner?
Yeah, the fund was a smart city fund. It was the reason why I mentioned smart city in my first answer to your question. So we invested in mobility, new energy, logistics, I would say, and prop tech. These four domains or sectors, in our perspective, were fully integrated and intertwined. Especially, we invested in Europe and Asia, Southeast Asia mainly. And this is something interesting. The city's fabric is very similar between Europe and Asia. This high density, very concentrated cities. It's not the case in the U.S., in the North America in general. More urban, sprawled cities. For instance, we invested in a lift maintenance company, and the lift maintenance market in North America is very small compared to Europe or Asia. Because in Europe and Asia, you have a lot of multifamily buildings. It's not only some skyscrapers doing the market. So most of the market is done by multifamily, 7 to 10 floors buildings. And these buildings are not so common in the North America than they are in Europe. So we invested in Europe and Southeast Asia from 2015-16 to 2022. So I just saw the best of the bubble of the tech bubble in 2021. I would say we helped to list several of our companies, to name a few of them: Bird, the scooter company. Delivery Hero, for instance, and some of these big Grab in Southeast Asia. So we were very happy with the 2021 bubble, and we also see the limitations or the downside of this cycle in 2022, and so on. It was a super good experience. And VC investing and startup as a whole is not the same thing in the zero interest rate policies and now, of course. Yep. And yep. I think it's a good reminder for any tech funders that you can't imagine to have unlimited liquidity available for your projects. You need to think about how I need to be profitable at the moment in my entrepreneurial journey.
Yes, a painful reminder for many folks that the you know, what we had been experiencing was atypical and not how you want to or what you should assume for kind of what the go forward and the kind of ongoing realities. It's interesting that you mentioned a lift maintenance company. I actually interviewed in an earlier podcast somebody working in the Bay Area on lift maintenance, primarily obviously here in the U.S. So an example of the lag, but so you know, obviously, you know, buildings have elevators and escalators that routinely break down, and these service contracts are not well understood by the building owners. And there are, I think, at least in the U.S., if not globally, just a couple elevator and escalator companies. It's almost monopolistic in the nature. So, you know, they have a lot of leverage. And now there's companies starting to come out to help groups, you know, enforce and actually help write better contracts for these owners and operators so that they can get value from the service contracts, etc. So
yes, and you can I know a similar company here in Europe and another one in Asia, and it's a super good business as you can demonstrate a direct return on investment to your clients, as you said, escalators and elevators are routinely out of service in several buildings. So it's very easy just to existing in the contract. And you can create a direct return investment to your clients. So very good business.
Yes, exactly. Well, let's talk about Stonal. We'd love to hear about kind of your path to joining them and kind of what your how this this relationship came to be.
Yeah, it's a very, very funny story. Stonal has been funded in 2017 by Michel Tolila, which is still the chairman of the company. And Michel created the company at the age of 65. So wow. I love this story. In my mind, it totally demonstrates the fact that you can create a company at any age. You can create a company in your 20s, but you can also create a company in your 60s. Michel was looking at a partner to continue and to accelerate the growth of the company, and I decided to apply or not apply some of the recipes I saw during my VC career, I became an entrepreneur. It's not so common. I mean, the traditional move is from entrepreneur to VC rather than VC to entrepreneur. Yeah, super happy of what we have done so far. Stonal now is a 150 employees company. We are a data management platform for the real estate industry, targeting asset owners and asset managers. Giving them the opportunity to make all their data, buildings, data, it could be plans, it could be documents, and we help them to automatically extract this data from existing documents. I mean, which strikes me in this industry is that the real estate industry produces a lot of data, a lot of them, but with people going on making on-site inspection and a lot of work and a lot of money spent to look at the building, but all this data is stored on a PDF at least, if not a paper or a paperwork, and just kept and not used to create a modern data stack or to nurture a data lake and become useful data to take insights. So what we have decided to apply machine learning and AI to understand all these documents. Could be an on-site monitoring inspection, could be an energy performance certificate, could be a lease agreement, and train algorithms able to read these documents, classify them, and extract valuable information within the documents. And at the end of the day, we recreate a modern data stack for clients, asset owners, asset managers, and with all these good and usable data stacks, they can make some inside decision about ESG, about CapEx planning, about compliance, and all this stuff, which are super important for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm going to dig into that a little bit more, but one question I did want to kind of follow up with was your kind of you talked about bringing your recipes from kind of what you'd seen as a VC. So, you know, recipes, playbooks, help drive growth. Kind of what was it that I guess what did the company look like when you joined, and how far have you? Your work in the time that you've been at Stonal, how have you been able to implement those and kind of really drive growth within the organization?
I joined around 2 years ago. We are now at we were at around 7-8 million euros revenues. We are now around 20, so it's a good growth. Serving like 50 clients in Europe, France, and the United Kingdom, and now we are deploying the product in all Western Europe, Germany, Netherlands, Nordics, and looking to North America and Middle East. So yeah, I would say that the company has changed a lot, and we have now a fully SaaS platform, full SaaS platform for clients. At first, and it was in my mind a good way to work. We provided a lot of services on top of the SaaS product, and I think it's a good way to create immediate revenues from the start, and a good way to not being profitable, but just to generate revenues and not to wait to have the perfect SaaS product. So offering services, and at the end, services is a good way to increase the stickiness of your clients. So I'm very happy to have this a small part of services on top of my SaaS product. But now we have a full SaaS product, and we can use and apply more and more AI tools on this data lake or the modern data stack. And we have just released our Stonal GPT. And it's just a crazy tool. As now everybody within an asset owner or asset management organization can get access to information about the buildings, about how it is managed, how I can find this equipment at which floor, and all this kind of stuff. And it could be just. We remove the gatekeeper effect. Gatekeeper is just the access to the data has been just kept by a few people within the organization, and they took advantage of this position to being important within the organization. I think GenAI and our Stonal GPT is a good way to equalize all the access to the data, making the data more transparent. And giving access to anybody within an organization or outside the organization. I mean, your property managers or your facility managers and your assessors, all the guys gravitating around your assets, access to your data. And for me, it's a revolution, as more transparency in the real estate industry is the best way to make it more accessible at the end of the day. And it's even more important in Europe, as I would say that in North America, the markets about real estate are much more transparent than they are in Europe.
Interesting. Real estate in the U.S. has been a laggard in the adoption of technology. I wouldn't have pegged it as necessarily a particularly transparent industry, but perhaps relative to to Europe. Perhaps it is. But I think that there has been a shift, certainly in terms of one, just the adoption of technology, two, that people aren't holding information as close to the chest and not they're being more willing to share than they have in the past. And I think that willingness to do that has fostered kind of innovation in the space as well. I think in our earlier conversation we kind of talked about how historically real estate investors, you know, could be pretty lazy. They could, you know, put money in, you know, get at, you know, buy an asset, you know, kind of just wait for it to appreciate and get the cash flows and appreciation. But that those days of kind of just the lazy investor and the lazy owner are kind of gone. And it's kind of a new era. I would love to hear from your perspective, kind of what are the forcing factors of this change and kind of where, you know, is it policy? What's really kind of driving this change that we're seeing here?
Yes, I think you're right. The time of lazy days has gone, mainly because real estate is one of the most leveraged asset class in the world. So it benefited largely from the zero interest rate policies during the 2010 to 2020, I would say. And to be honest, making performance in this market was not so difficult. And when you look at I would say beta, most of the investment managers just make the beta of the market. They didn't create any alpha, any additional performance regarding the market. It's gone because interest rates have gradually becoming returning to normal. I couldn't say what is normal, but I would say that normal is at least higher than what we have experienced during the last decade. And the second point is the transformation of the office. I would say that the remote work policies, even if it could have back and forth, and now we have this coming back to the office policy in larger corporate, but at the end of the day, the demand for office will be substantially lower than it was even 5 or 6 years ago. And I just look at some of the data on press release from larger corporates, and as soon as they announce relocation, they divide the square foot of their the footprint of their offices by two or three. So it's just a crazy revolution. So I would say that offices, which was in my mind one of the most laziest asset class, you just have to take a big building, just deploying tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars or euros in one asset, and just signing a long-term lease agreement, and you have just to collect your money at the end of the day. This scheme will become more and more difficult to replicate. So you need to find more granular asset class. Could be leisure, could be even retail, or maybe some residential, but not the multifamily as we have known over the last decade. And all these new asset classes, you need to work much more to create and to extract value from them. You need to have an operating company. In the case in logistics, in the case in residential, in the case for student housing, for instance, in Europe or things like that. So you need to better know your assets, and just having a broad, not a very precise view about your assets, because at the end of the day, you will create a data room for the next buyer as a seller. This time is gone. You need to have a precise report and information on your assets, and being ready to know very precisely how you want to invest in terms of CapEx, for instance, in terms of CapEx to reach the constraints from environmental policy, from energy performance efficiency, and now you need to monitor assets. And for me, again, it's a good thing, because at the end of the day, it will benefit from everybody in the market. The best asset managers will make the difference among the crowd. The renters will benefit from that, and we will have opportunity to transform the not interesting office assets to new things. Could be housing, could be leisure, could be other kind of asset class. But at the end of the day, it's a great reset of the industry.
Yep. Now, to your point, I think this reimagining of the commercial real estate is going to be the theme of the next five plus years. Mm-hmm. Is like this. These kind of massive buildings, as you were saying, that are not going to fill back up in the way that they were in the past. It's going to require owners and operators to think differently, to bring in new types of tenants, to reuse the space in different ways. I think for the better, but obviously some painful times in the short term as they kind of again move from trying to continue to run the same playbooks as you kind of described, and now having to kind of think differently and kind of search out new ways to use these spaces.
And I'm not even speaking about potential disruptions like Apple Vision Pro or smart glasses. It could totally transform the movie theaters industry. It could change the advertising industry forever. So I would say that the job of asset managers, asset owners, is maybe the most interesting period ever, but also the most dangerous one, I would say. So
yep.
It's the two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely. And then to your point about those that know, are digitally have the information out of the documents into the data lake, as you were describing, and being able to mine and ask those sorts of questions, and as you kind of using that Stonal GPT type solution where lots of people can be asking these questions. You don't have gatekeepers that are kind of controlling the information. Everybody's able to ask it and get quick real-time responses, as opposed to kind of waiting for somebody to generate a report and some sort of backlog. Those that are kind of using these tools are going to be the ones that kind of lead that transformation that we're going to be going through here. Let's compliance. You know, not the sexiest area, but like obviously a big data driver. We'd love to hear kind of from your perspective the use cases that you're seeing clients use Stonal to address the kind of compliance requirements that are coming down the pipeline.
Yes, again, you're right. It's not the sexiest part of the job, but it's a very powerful driver for our product and solutions and for data collection as a whole, especially on the ESG stuff. With a lot of different policies, ESG in Europe could imply energy efficiency, could imply services for the tenants. It's a broad spectrum of policies and regulation. It could be your greenhouse gas reduction strategies and your net zero strategy. So it's a big thing. It would be access to disabled persons, for instance. So again, it's fire safety has been a big thing also recently, especially in the UK. So broad scope. What we do at Stonal, it's not to look at to map every local regulation and to look if it's compliant with what we can see in the documents. It will be a crazy job not very scalable. So what we do in every country, every developed countries, you have regulation asking for regular periodic on-site monitoring inspection. And what we do, we help our clients to read through these documents very easily. So what we do, we have trained our algorithm to read all these documents and spot on the most critique or important things, the most important alerts, the red one, the big red one, and don't care about the non-compliance or of a very tiny non-strategic equipment. And just by doing that, when you manage hundreds or thousands of buildings, just having in mind that on these three buildings, you have a very high risk to be in front of the judge because you could have a fire safety issue and something like that, is a very something very important for our clients. So this is a way we try to look at compliance. And on ESG, the ESG stuff, what we do is really to help our clients to have a net zero approach, not only on consumption, but also on carbon embed in their buildings. Just to give you an example, it's super important. Now you can imagine to change your windows by super new insulated windows with a three layers, insulation layers. Okay, they are better than the previous ones. And you gain some energy efficiency, of course. But your energy is mainly provided by, I don't know, nuclear or even solar or wind. So what you gain is a very small amount of carbon. But your old existing windows, the one you have changed, these windows should have lasted for 10 years, maybe 15 years. And by changing these windows by new ones, you have wasted about some carbons, because in the production of these windows, some carbons have been consumed. So what we do is really this equilibrium, not only focusing on energy efficiency and energy consumption, but taking the whole calculation into mind and looking at that and saying, okay, sometimes you could keep your existing building. And it's okay because the additional investment, the new equipment will generate at the end of the day more carbon than the one you can imagine to save. So this is the one of our main important, most important strategy we have on ESG.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think obviously US is a little bit of a laggard in this yeah. area, but there are regulations. Particularly one in New York coming out that are forcing kind of setting the stage for what's to come and looking at how asset managers and operators are going to comply and kind of meet those requirements. So we will certainly be needing to learn from our friends in Europe about best practices and how to do this and maybe Stonel is time to things are timed very well with kind of what's coming down the pipeline here in the US. Yeah. to help.
And you're totally right. I think Europe is at the forefront and France even more. Maybe North America is a bit laggard on this topic, but at the end of the day, all of this stuff will be equalized among developed nations. I explain, it will be done by municipalities. You mentioned the New York City. It could be done by asset managers themselves. At the end of the day, they will require the same tool for every country, every sectors, and they will calibrate the tool on the most stringent region. So I think at the end of the day, regulation in the North America and in Europe will converge. It will maybe take some time, but it will converge. I'm not a big fan of over-regulation, and I wrote a lot of things on over-regulation in ESG in the real estate industry in France and Europe. But at the end of the day, yeah, it will be in the middle between North America and Europe, maybe Southeast Asia. And in Southeast Asia, for instance, they try to replicate a lot of what has been done in Europe. So yes, again, I think we need to be very aware of what it is done and not to have just blind eye, just saying it's not for us. They are in the wrong direction. I think it will converge.
Yeah. One thing I'm curious on is data privacy, and I know that's a huge. Again, Europe having a very different perspective and than kind of what currently exists in the U.S. So how is this creation and accessibility to data? How does data privacy come into play here?
Yes, we are mainly working with data about the buildings, so not really concerned by the GDPR or all the privacy stuff. I would say that what my clients are afraid of is the Cloud Act and the fact that if their data are stored in the US, they are at risk that they can be used against them or for stuff like that. So they ask us that the data will not leave the European Union. So mainly, but it's quite easy with all the cloud providers offer a local solution in Western Europe. It could have been an issue with the LLM stuff. So we can't use LLM based in the US. So we have decided to use an open source LLM just to be able to deal with the data in the country and not make them leave the country. But again, I think tomorrow if we do some business in the Middle East, they will have the same requirements. So it's not something totally silly. I think if we do business in North America, they will ask that the data be stored in North America as well. And even for performance, just for performance issues, it's a good way to do that. So again, not a big deal for us because we are not dealing with consumer, with people data. We are dealing with building data, so not really concerned by these issues.
Gotcha. Just to kind of step away from Stonel for a second as we kind of wrap up the conversation. I know prior to working at Stonel, you founded Realestech, where this community focused on real estate disruption. Would love to hear kind of what that work is and kind of what prompted you again to lead this group.
Again, around 2015, I became aware of all the conservativeness and of this industry, and I think that PropTech could be a good answer to change the thing. If I look back, I would say that I was far more too optimistic. I would say that. I think it's peak in 2017 or 18, just in France, but bit Western Europe, but mainly focusing on France. We have like 200 companies as members of our PropTech association, and to be honest, we were all convinced that we could change more radically this industry. Not 10 years, but 8 years later or 9 years later, I would say that, of course, it's more mixed. Tech and innovation has percolated in the industry, for sure. And some of the very painful customer journey, like selling, getting a mortgage, or I've been improved for sure in every country. One of my latest deals in at Eurasio was in the largest one-stop shop platform for housing in Indonesia. And it was crazy because the sector was nowhere, so they were just building what would be the perfect industry, and you have this perfect one-stop shop helping you to pick up your dream home, finding your loan, and yeah, very very interesting to create it from zero. But in Europe or North America, it was not a possible move. So I would say again, I would not say deceitful, but deceived. But I think and I hope that the incumbents in the future will continue to invest to improve things for the consumer. And this is very particular to the real estate industry. I would say you have this bottleneck on the offer. As you cannot create new homes or new offices, super fancy offices in a minute, overnight, because you have the bottleneck due to land at the end of the day. Innovation is not very rewarding. In the car industry, in the telco industry, if you don't innovate, at the end of the day, your market share will shrink very rapidly. In real estate, you don't really care to innovate, as you invest money in the process, but it doesn't really change your market share or your revenues, and even not your profitability. But I hope that it, even if disruption, so a newcomer coming and grabbing all the market and all the market share is not possible in this industry, for sure. Mm-hmm. I hope that incumbents will continue to invest and to look at what is called PropTech, but just improving their product and services, because it's not possible to have the rest of our economy just improving goods and services every year, and you have this big sector just continue to not to sleep, but not not advancing very very rapidly.
Yep. One more question before we unfortunately have to wrap up. Would love to get your take on what's coming later on in the year and in the future. Any kind of, as you peer into your crystal ball, any thoughts on what's going to be happening in the real estate space that we should all be cognizant of or thinking about?
Again, I would say for me the most interesting thing in real estate is the transformation of the commercial real estate or the reinvention of the commercial real estate industry. For sure, we need to find another life for all these existing commercial real estate assets which are now empty forever. What can I say from my position at Stonehold? I'm very very curious and happy to see the deployment of AI in this industry, because it could change things very rapidly, and again help for transparency, help for democratization of the access to the data, help for more openness between players, and so very very interested in seeing the real impact of AI on this industry. And it's not a question about job losses or replacement of humans by machines. I don't buy this theory. I think it's more about how our very old-fashioned organization are able to digest such a managerial transformation. Now everybody will get access to the data. It's crazy change when you think about that.
Absolutely, absolutely. With that, Robin, unfortunately, we do need to draw our conversation to an end. Thank you so much for coming on PropTech Espresso and sharing your story and also about what you're helping to build and drive at Stonehold. Really, really interesting, and would love to keep in contact and perhaps have you on the show again in the future for another episode. But for anybody in the audience that's listening and would like to contact you or Stonehold, what's the best way for them to reach out?
First, thank you for finding me, Mark. It was a real pleasure. And everybody can contact me just by email, robin.riveton, R-I-V-A-T-O-N, @ stonehold.com.
Awesome. Well, best of luck. Look forward to keeping in contact, and have a great day.
Have a good day. Bye.
You've been listening to an episode of PropTech Espresso. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more, visit hearstx.com/podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.